am so excited to be here with you today. This is Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and this is my 200th episode of Hashtag No Limits. I never imagined when I started this that I would be into it 200 episodes later. I have learned some amazing things about fantastic people over the last 4.5 years, I think is how long that I have been doing this. And I am so appreciative to every single one of my guests that have been here and to all of you that listen and watch, because it wouldn't be as interesting if I didn't have people watching and listening, but I think I would still do it because I am learning and growing so much. Hashtag No Limits is about people that society has placed limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not what we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, very quick, short science lesson. Caterpillar dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. That can't be easy. But neither is busting through the limits that society places upon us. And today, being the 200th episode, there's a couple of different things that are going to happen. We have a giveaway going. I say we, I guess I'm talking about me and Meryl. I'm not sure who the we was that I just thought about. But anyway, there will be some giveaways happening today. St. Louis Cardinals baseball tickets and Holiday World Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. They will be given out, but you do have to be here live. And in order to get registered to win those, you have to be participating in the comment section. You have to be asking questions. You have to be putting in your comments, because otherwise I don't know that you're here. So one easy way to do a comment very quickly, and we already have somebody who did this, is just give me a hashtag live and where you're watching from. Thank you so much, Fran, for joining us today, and good luck to you as the episode continues. All right, I don't want to talk any more about me, so I'm going to bring my guest on today. I'm really thrilled that Meryl is my 200th guest, because not only is she my 200th guest, but I have not had a person with her disability before. And so to have 200 episodes and not have someone with her disability, and I hate, I don't like the word disability, and we might get into that, but with her abilities, and I'm going to bring her on now. Meryl, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Shelley. I'm great. I'm excited to be here on your 200th episode. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I am excited myself. And so we met on LinkedIn, and you were someone that I was following, and we just connected with each other. And I'm so thankful that you agreed to be here. So tell us, what is it that brings you here today?
A lovely invitation from you, of course. That's all I needed.
Well, thank you. But what kind of limits might it be that you have busted through that we're going to talk about today? What is it that your abilities are that I have never had on my show before?
So I was born profoundly deaf, and I just learned how to speak in lip read. That my primary way of communicating is through lip reading. Natural language often is a huge, misconception that are people born deaf use sign language, and that's not true. It's actually a small percentage. And it's just what works for me in my life. Don't know right or wrong. I just don't have anyone in my life that's fluent in sign language. And It's a language, just like any other language. It takes time to learn, and you have to keep it up to retain it.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, that so many people think that deaf people automatically learn sign language. And I have, as an advocate for special education, I have talked to parents many times about possibly getting their child an AAC device because of what you just said, that it is a separate language. Not a lot of people use that language to speak. And so when people are out in public, if they're not lip reading like you're doing, now you're also, and we'll talk about this in a second, you have a special tool happening that's really, because you're not looking at me as much as you're looking at this tool that you're using. But, you know, if somebody has an AAC device, I'm sorry, augmentative alternative communication device, for those who don't know, I try not to use acronyms. And if they know that you have one of those devices, they'll be patient and they'll wait for you to speak with that. But if you try to speak to them in sign language, it is a foreign language to them.
Absolutely. So I respect everybody's preference. And I know a lot of deaf people who prefer the sign language. And we try to work it together. I know some sign, I know the finger alphabet. So we try to meet in the middle when we communicate with each other and respect each other, because that's just how our lives turn out. And the tool you're probably talking about is the caption. I'm using a combination of reading your lip and the caption to follow along with what you're saying. You're very easy to lip read because you enunciate well. Too often people think they need to talk loud or real slow, which I don't have patience for that.
Well, I think my background in education probably helps me enunciate. I did teach a lot of students through a method where it was about how the mouth was formed when you're making different letters. And so I have tried to be very clear when I'm speaking because I had to teach it in a certain way. And so it kind of became habit for me. But I know people mumble. And I have an in-law family of mumblers. And if they're watching, they're going to say, we don't mumble, you just don't hear us. But
yeah, exactly. Some of the best people that understand the best are teachers. That's why I formed friendship with some of my teachers after I grew up. And because they were easy to understand, and of course they were a wealth of knowledge, and I always like meeting people who know a lot of things. So, and it makes such a difference when somebody's easy to understand. And I also have a cochlear implant because as you probably know, Shelley, a lot of us look the same on the lip without sound. So the cochlear implant helps me distinguish those sounds like mom, pop, mop. But it does not make me like a hearing person. It just helps me in my everyday life, but it does not make it possible for me to pick up a phone and call somebody.
Right. Yeah. And I think we just don't think about that. Do you happen to know the percentage of people either worldwide or in the United States who are deaf or hard of hearing?
If I remember right, I quote this number so many times. I think 500, it's in the 500-600 million range of people who are deaf and hard of hearing, the whole combination. I don't know what the percentage is, but those numbers are going to be climbing rapidly in upcoming years, mainly because we have so much sound that are affecting people's hearing and just other environment situations that affect that. And people are living longer as well.
Okay. I'm so glad you said that. I was going to ask you to explain that a little more. And my husband and I went to a sports bar recently, and you know, there were, gosh, I don't even know how many television screens, and you know, just, it was so loud in there. And there was a family sitting at a table next to us, and they had a baby in a high chair, nothing protecting its ears. And I just cringed. And then they had a little bit older child, again, no ear protection. And I thought, oh, those poor children, what are we doing to their hearing when we're not, you know? And there's, like you said, there are so many sounds and so much noise all the time. My mom, from the time I was, I don't know, it was before my teen years, realized that she had a hearing deficit and needed hearing aids. And so I've been around someone most of my life. And so maybe that's also helped with how I speak, because I know she does a lot of lip reading as well. So, and I have found myself doing that as I'm getting older, and I have lost some sounds. There are certain tones that I don't hear as well. And so that's interesting that you included, because people are living longer, that those numbers of deaf and hard of hearing are going to increase. Oh, I can't hear you.
Sorry, I had it on mute.
Okay.
Environment is a big problem. I have an Apple Watch that lets me know when it's a certain decibel and it's not safe for people with hearing. It's not a problem for me, but I always like to know when I'm in really loud setting. And I can't tell you how many times my watch goes off in a public setting, whether at a theater or a restaurant or wherever. When it goes off, that means everybody who's in that room, hearing is at risk for hearing changes. So that's a major aspect of it. And I think that somebody asked a great question. I wanted to answer, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
Fran asked, are you offended by hearing impaired? I am not a fan. However, I have some friends who identify themselves as hearing impaired. They do not identify as deaf, and they do not identify as hard of hearing. Some people find the phrase hard of hearing is old-fashioned, and they prefer hearing impaired. So what I recommend is, if you're talking about the general population of hearing disabilities, you just say hearing disability, deaf, hard of hearing. And you only use the phrase hearing impaired when somebody says that's how they identify, and we have to respect that because it's about them. It's not about me. It's about them. I have seen deaf people get very angry at someone for identifying as hearing impaired, and that I'm sorry. In this case, they need to respect for someone's choice.
Yeah, and that's so difficult to do because we often don't know the person well enough to know what their preference would be. And I kind of said this too at the beginning when I was talking about your disability. And then I said, I really don't like that word. And I don't know, what is your preference?
My preference is deaf because that's what I am medically. I was born profoundly deaf. So those four levels of hearing loss, there is mild and moderate. Those are typically the hard of hearing range. And then there's severe and profound. I'm in profound. That's the deaf range. Growing up, though, I would tell people I was hearing impaired because it's not right, but that was the unspoken thing. Hearing impaired was less disabled than deaf when I was growing up. And I was a teenager just trying to survive a world where I was so different from people and hard enough, right? So that's the term I use, but I've been using deaf for many, many years now.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. Yeah, I know that we have some people who have joined since the beginning, and I just want to let those people know that this is a giveaway episode. And in order to have an opportunity to win either the St. Louis Cardinals baseball tickets, and that game is, sorry, I had to write it down. It is May 6th at 6:45 in St. Louis, and they're playing the Pirates. So in order to be eligible to win those tickets or the Splashing Safari in Holiday World, Indiana, you need to be commenting. And when the timer goes off, the last person who commented, you will be the winner for those either pair of tickets. So it'll be the first winner gets to choose if they want the Cardinal tickets or the Splash and Safari. And then the second winner will get whichever one the first one didn't choose. So make sure that you're commenting. And one easy way to do that is to just say hashtag live and where you're from. And these offers will not be available in the replay. So you must make sure that you are with me today and with Meryl today, and that you are commenting as Fran and L.A. Jansen have done. And L.A. Jansen, thank you so very much. I appreciate that. So back to you, Meryl, because it's, again, it's not about me. This is an episode where I want to learn about you, and I want to share about the limits that you, I don't want to share, I want you to share about the limits that you have busted through in your lifetime. I watched one of your TEDx talks that's online, and I was so touched and inspired by that. So I hope you will share some of those things with the audience today.
Thank you. So the biggest challenge I have that will never change is it's impossible to understand somebody 100% of the time when they're speaking. And it's frustrating because I learn from what other people say, not from when I speak. I learn nothing from myself. I learn from others. So listening is such an important tool. And so many people take it for granted because so many people are not too good listeners. They're surface listeners. They're listening to respond instead of listening for understanding. There's a difference. So in my TED Talk, I tried to show an example of what it's like to be, a tiny example of what it's like to be me every day in a conversation. And I put blank words and more than, so on average, deaf people only read one third of what's said. There are a couple of people who disagree with that, but I'm like, this is based on my experience and not about right. Because we fill in so many blanks, and sometimes you don't have the context, and you can't fill in blanks, and that's frustrating. And sometimes you just get tired of asking people to repeat that you're just like, resorting to social bluffing. That means you're faking it. You're faking that you understand what they're saying. And I know that's wrong, but sometimes you just don't have the energy to understand what they're really saying, and you just want to keep the conversation. You don't want to stop the conversation, especially when there's a group.
Right. And I know just from my mom, and thank you, Erin, for that. Congratulations. I know from the conversations that I've had with my mom, she has said that often, that she has hearing aids in both ears now, and that a lot of times she still gets a lot of background noise and doesn't always get enough of the foreground from the people or person speaking directly to her. So sometimes she's nodded and smiled along and you know, agreed or made some sort of some sort of gesture to where, like you said, she doesn't want to stop the conversation, or maybe she has already asked a couple of times and doesn't want to ask again. And she said, yeah, I wonder sometimes how many things I'm agreeing to that I probably wouldn't agree to if I could hear everything that was being said.
Yeah, that has happened to me. So, oh my gosh. One time I was talking to a friend, and I didn't quite catch what they said, and we were walking our separate ways. My spouse happened to overhear what she said, and I was so embarrassed. It was not a good thing. And I was just crying and nodding, oh my God. So what I did was, as soon as I got home, I emailed her and I said, I'm sorry, this happened. I didn't mean to react that way. This is how I really react. I just didn't quite catch what you said. So I told her the truth and just leaned into it, that kind of thing. But as I'm nodding with you, sometimes nodding is not necessarily bluffing. It just means I'm paying attention to you. I'm catching what you're saying. So that's why it's so hard to tell when I'm really bluffing. because I use it as a tool when I'm listening, but that's my way of saying I'm catching what you're saying.
Yeah. And I have to be honest, I've actually had a couple of experiences in the last few years. Like I said, I'm starting to lose some letter sounds, and I have found myself asking people to repeat what they've said. And once they've done it and I still didn't hear it or catch all of it, just doing that. Yep. Nodding along. And I've had a couple of times that I've had to do that. And the other person kind of looks at me like I gave them the wrong response. And I remember my mom telling me that sometimes, that, you know, people would just like, well, that wasn't appropriate, or that I didn't ask a question, or whatever. And so I can't imagine, Meryl, going through that every second of every day for your entire life, how tiring it must be physically, but also emotionally, because you are being excluded without anybody intentionally excluding you, but you're kind of feeding into the exclusion because you don't want to stop the conversation and because you haven't been able to catch or figure out all the words. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. That's the one thing about being deaf. It can be a very isolating, socially isolating disability. I mean, I can't speak for our deaf people because it's a spectrum. We all have different experiences. So I can only speak from my experience, but I know my whole life, I will go through periods of loneliness and social isolation, and it is hard and it is draining. It took like 30 years before I learned. I always thought I was kind of a low energy person, and I don't mean by not being able to run, not that way. I mean in terms of mental and physical tiredness and energy level. Because I would come home from school and just crash. And I didn't understand it until many years later. So I was me, but I had sensory overload from lip reading all day, from listening to teacher, you know, it was exhausting. So I didn't realize that, unfortunately, my way of listening is draining. But it's also a joy. Because especially when I understand what you're talking about, it's a joy, but it doesn't stop it from draining me because I am still working harder than the average hearing person when listening.
Yeah, and what you mentioned about only hearing approximately one third of everything that is being said, that was the TED Talk that I watched. And excuse me, sorry, I hadn't ever realized that, how little. And you had the words up on the screen of a paragraph, and like you had every third-ish word. It wasn't exactly every third word. And I guessed at what all those words were going to be, and I didn't have most of them correct. And I kind of already knew the context. So I just, that left a great impression on me. To really think about. And in my education career, I've really only worked with two or three, I'm just trying to scroll through all the people that I've ever worked with that were deaf or hard of hearing and who were eligible for special education. And I didn't do the math on figuring out that percentage, but 500 to 600 million out of 7 billion. I mean, we are talking a small percentage of society. I know how tiring it is for students with specific learning disabilities to try to keep up. And I think it's a little bit comparable to what you go through, as far as just that draining, because you're putting so much energy into trying to process what was said that you, like you said, you're probably putting in 10 times maybe the effort. And I would have teachers that would really irritate me because they would tell me that some of my students were just sitting there. And I said, if we could take a picture of their brain, what you see is just sitting there, their brain is processing so much more and so much differently than the kid that you think is working so much harder. How were your experiences in school?
Yeah, that's exactly right. My elementary and most of my middle school years were the best because teachers spoke clearly. But as I got older and older, I was stuck getting into teachers who were mumblers and hard to follow, especially, of course, math and science, which was not my greatest strength. And mm-hmm. I remember I didn't take physics in high school because we only had one physics teacher, and I knew I didn't understand him. So right. I skipped him. And then college, oh my God, it got so much worse because you're dealing with mumblers and people who were not originally English speakers, or they're from another country. And it sounds so wrong when I say that, but I have a harder time understanding somebody who learned perfect English, but English is not the first language, or they're from another country, because they pronounce things differently. And right. I had to learn this the hard way when a good friend of mine who was born and raised in India was talking, and she kept saying lost, what I thought was lost, L-O-S-T. But I'm like, that context did not work in what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I finally figured it out. She was saying the name Ross with an R-O-S-S. So that's when it dawned on me why I have a hard time with people who learn English outside of the United States, or they spoke a different language. They're fluent in a different language. I hope I'm saying this nicely, because I always feel like it sounds like bias. But the thing is, I was raised on American English. So how we pronounce things here, I mean, even Canada and the UK and Australia, where they speak English too, as the primary language, they can be tough to understand because of how they speak a little differently. You know, I have talent for recognizing when I'm watching TV. Just the other day, I asked my spouse, is that person British? Because I was reading the lip and it looked like a British accent. So that was exciting when I can figure that out.
I don't even know how you decipher an accent based on how they're saying it. That's an amazing skill.
I can even decipher sign language. So I remember very clearly when I saw For a Wedding and a Funeral, and it was signing in that movie. And I told somebody I was watching, hey, those signing with an accent. I could see there was a difference, even though I'm not fluent in American sign language, they were speaking British sign language. I just have an ability to tell the difference between American and British. They both have their unique style. I don't know how to explain that, even though I'm not fluent in either language.
I think that's just one of the superpowers. I often say that I call them superpowers, but the extra abilities that come when one area isn't as strong as everything else. And, you know, I've said, like, people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are great multitaskers. That is their superpower. They can keep track of five or six things at one time. And I'm many times lucky to just keep track of one. So
I have a whole family of people with ADHD, and I'm so grateful for that because they all manage ADHD differently. They all are affected differently. They don't have the stereotypical behavior that people associate with ADHD. That's why we've got to stop with the assumption, stop with the stereotype, because a lot of times they're wrong. So right. That's why I love my family and their diversity, because I get to learn from them. And I have one kid who's ADHD, which is autistic and ADHD. So, okay. Yeah, and I know how to work with. I have a client who has severe ADHD, as he calls it, not me. And he appreciated how I'm able to help him navigate that so we can get our work done.
Yeah. Well, I need to let our viewers know, and Fran just commented again, but Fran, you're the winner. You are the first winner, so you get to decide if you want two St. Louis Cardinals baseball tickets or if you want the Splash and Safari tickets to Holiday World. There's 2-day passes. You can choose any day. My understanding of the passes, at least, is you can choose any day during this year season of going to Holiday World. So you get either 2 baseball tickets to the St. Louis Cardinals or 2 Holiday World passes. So let me know. And her comment that just made my phone is on do not disturb. So my timer didn't make any noise. But she says she has a chipmunk, but most people would not know it, meaning her attention deficit. She's like very quickly distracted by something. Exactly.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you talked about in your TED talk that I hadn't thought about how impactful it is for someone like yourself, closed captioning, using the tool plus also the lip reading, but using the closed captioning tool.
Yes. If I go to a meeting and there's no caption, a video meeting and there's no caption, I feel like I'm flying without a net. Even though I can lip read someone, it feels so different because it's like you're scared. It just feels unsafe. I can't explain it. It's just a feeling I get. And that's why I prefer online meetings now, because I've got 2 things helping me here rather than 1 when in person. And yes, there are automatic captioning tools for the phone and everything that you can have when you're out and about, but it's just different in person than it is for online. I can't explain that, but the pandemic forced all these companies to start adding captions and making them a regular part of video conferences, and browsers like Chrome have captions built in. And now Windows 11 has captions built in, and it's my backup for any time the captions fail anywhere else. So it just changed my life so much because I'm able to interact more with people from my home office now than I did for 15 years with nothing.
Yeah, and one of the things that you say in your talk is the fact that, you have a child. I don't know if you have more than one, but in the talk you mentioned your son and the fact that you have 3. Okay. and you talked about the fact that your son was away at college and it was after the pandemic. And you can tell the story. It's your story.
So this was 2021. He graduated in the pandemic, for God. And fall of 2021 is when he started at Purdue University in Indiana. I'm in Texas, Plano, Texas, by the way. And one day, we hardly hear from him. And he's about to graduate in May. So it's been 4 years now. And we hardly hear from him. But in that first year, that was new for both of us, to be separated for so long. And just out of the blue, we wanted to do a video call, not a call, but a video call, because he has seen me in 2020 on meeting with caption. So he would walk past my home office every day and see me in video call, and he understood how it worked for me. So it was just an amazing, we haven't done very many video calls in the 4 years, but we have done a couple, and that's more than I can say for my other 2 kids. Well, one lives with us, the other lives in Austin. And we only did video calls when she was overseas, and that was before caption. And the video quality was so bad. Another problem with video calls without caption is sometimes the video quality is just really bad. That's why I don't use Google Meet very much, because the video quality is not always as good as the other platforms.
Yeah. And I found that just so sweet. And also, again, so touching to think that was probably one of the first conversations you ever had with him that you weren't trying to figure out every word he was saying, because although closed captioning is not perfect, it filled in a whole lot more words than what you would normally have gotten in a conversation.
Absolutely. And he was in his dorm room, so it was a quiet room. The quieter the room, the better the captions will be. And of course, he talks standard American English, so it got most of what he said. The only time it did a bad job, the kid is majoring in aerospace engineering, literal rocket science, and yeah. He would mention his classes, then of course those terms didn't go very well. And he loved things like Dungeons and Dragons, and he would talk about a thing from that, and there's always fancy words from that game as well. So the caption will clue us for that.
Yeah, I would imagine so. That's what I was thinking you were going to get to when you were talking, which was why I was kind of preemptively laughing, because I was realizing that was probably where you were going to go. So LA jumped on and said, so how do you hear when you are out in public when no closed captioning is available? And I know you talked about this at the beginning, but I think she joined after you had mentioned that.
I've done this before. So I mentioned I was born profoundly deaf and I relapsed. And growing up, I had hearing aids until I was in my 30s. And then after I had my youngest, the one that's about to graduate, I got a cochlear implant. And to me, it's like a hearing aid for the most part. Anyway, so it helps me be a better lip reader. Not perfect, but better. And when we're in noisy situations, it takes away the ability to be able to use it to help. Even though I have some adjustment on my phone for my implant, it's still too much. It's a challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Thank you for the question, LA. And Aaron and Fran and LA, keep commenting, because, and whoever else is joining us, because I know that according to my number ticker at the top, there's more than just you three. So make sure that you're letting us know that you're watching us, because that'll put you in the opportunity to win those Cardinals tickets. Fran took the Holiday World tickets. So keep those comments coming and let Meryl and I know what you're thinking about her and some of the limits that you can already tell that she's busted through, but we haven't necessarily touched upon. And by that, I mean, and I think this is kind of sad that people have it's more than kind of sad. It is sad that people have this limiting belief that someone who is deaf or who is blind or who has whatever disability will never marry. They will never have a happy grown-up life. They will never, you know, be much of anything. And you just mentioned you have a spouse, you have three kids. Did you ever experience those kinds of limiting beliefs?
Well, I know I have seen during COVID and during the fires in California, I read stories about people with disabilities. Well, the doctors, especially in COVID, disabled people's lives were expendable, you know, because they probably don't have happy lives anyway, and that's not true. I mean, there are people with a disability that doesn't allow them to talk with a voice or move much, or they have to have a machine to breathe or whatnot, but they're living full, happy life. I mean, there's just so much technology and resources now to make that possible. And so in a way, living today is so much better than 100 years ago. Well, they just put you in a corner and, you know, it's really sad, you know, because I have accomplished so much. But every time I do something new, I basically have to start over and proving to these people I am capable. And I'm a human being. Talk to me. You can text me. I mean, there's so many ways to communicate now. That can't be an excuse anymore. But I was very fortunate my parents never had limiting beliefs. They took me to opera. They took me to musical. They took me to ballet. They just treated me like a kid and wanted me to experience these things. They took me on trips. And it turns out I love musicals. Yes, even though I could not follow everything someone was saying, but I learned the song. I learned the storyline, and it helped me enjoy the show. And I really especially love it when a musical comes out as a movie because it's captioned now, and I can get the words. And that's why it was so awesome when Disney put Hamilton on during COVID on July 4th, I think it was 2020, they put Hamilton on. Because I was like, I'm never going to be able to see Hamilton in person because there's too many words. It's not repetitive, you know, like the old musicals where they have a lot of repetitive lines like Do Re Mi and Sound of Music, right? But now musicals really have that kind of repetition. They've gotten fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a couple of comments here. So this one is from Fran. She says, do your cochlear implants ever need to be adjusted?
Not too often. I have gone for a couple, which is not bad. Usually one time lasted for many years. But and if I get an upgrade, a new cochlear device, the outside part, I have to get it reprogrammed every time I get an upgrade.
And then we have Leslie. Thank you for joining us and commenting. And she says, my daughter was born profoundly deaf and has bilateral cochlear implants.
I have one. I didn't get two. So back when I got it, this was 2003, I got one. At the time, you get one, and then you wait, and then you get another. But I got so sick after the surgery. It made me so dizzy for weeks that I could not stand it. Idea of going through that again with my other ear, and now it's been too long, so I could get a second one.
Really? There's a time frame for when you can get them?
Yes. Well, it depends on different factors. First of all, let's say you've gone 18 years without a hearing aid or anything, you're not going to qualify. You're most likely not going to qualify for a cochlear implant because you need to be exposed to sound recently. So the last time this ear had any sound was when I got the cochlear implant. I did not wear the hearing aid in the ear, and I found it very uncomfortable to have two different devices. So this one's just been silent all these years.
Oh, wow. So we have another question here from LA. Since you were born deaf, why hasn't it affected your ability to talk? The lady who comes to our pantry, her voice is very deep and hard to understand.
Oh, I love that question. Thank you for asking that. So I took a lot of speech therapy, the first 10 years of my life were speech therapy. After school, speech therapy. Speech therapy all summer. I mean, I was privileged that my parents could do that for me. In fact, I grew up in Fort Worth, Texas, and my mom would drive me to Dallas 3 days a week to go to UT Dallas Cellular Center, which is an hour from where we lived. And yeah, so my parents just put me in a lot of speech therapy. It made a difference. I've got a deaf friend in England who does not have a trace of an accent. I have an accent. I know a deaf accent, but she doesn't have one because she apparently did hardcore more speech therapy than I did. So it all depends on the person's background. If they were born deaf or deaf or native, if they started learning to lip read and speak early or later, there's a lot of factors that can affect how somebody sounds and speaks, or whether they speak at all.
Right. Awesome. Well, guys, keep answering those questions. Keep putting the comments into the chat because we only have a couple minutes left until the next timer goes off. So you're working towards getting those Cardinals baseball tickets for May 6th, 6:45 p.m., Pirates versus Cardinals. And I think they were row 6 behind the Cardinals dugout. So you're going to be pretty close to the players and have really good seats. So be sure to keep those comments coming. And thank you for everyone who has commented so far.
I love that you have baseball tickets, because that was one of my favorite things to do with my dad, is we would go to Texas Ranger games.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up watching baseball with my parents, and I was the St. Louis Cardinals is my team, because that's who I always rooted for with my dad when he was alive. And I don't know any of the players anymore. I don't follow it like I used to, but I would still say I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan over any other baseball team.
Yeah, same thing. Texas Rangers, and growing up, I knew all the player names, not so much anymore. And I'm sorry my dad wasn't around when the Rangers finally won the World Series, but he had passed away in 2007, and they won in 2023. So it was a bit later after he passed away.
Yeah.
But he grew up on the Brooklyn Dodgers. So, I have a connection with the Brooklyn Dodgers too. Not LA, Brooklyn. There's a difference.
Right. Oh, yeah, I know. We had the St. Louis Rams football team for a while, and then they moved out to Arizona, and they moved out to Los Angeles. They're the LA Rams now, which they may have been there to begin with. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I'm like, whatever. They're not my team anymore. So let's see. Fran says, I'm going to a game the Sunday prior, or I would have gone for the Cards tickets. Oh, okay. So she's already going to a baseball game. So that's awesome. Congratulations, Fran. I'm glad you get to go to that. And now you get to go to Holiday World. That's fantastic. So, I had a question. So growing up, you did or did not find yourself eligible for special education?
I was not eligible. I mean, I don't know if I wasn't eligible with my parents opted not to put me in it. I mean, I got speech therapy. I got pulled out for speech therapy in elementary school, but by middle school, that was done. So that was the only time I got pulled out.
Okay. And whenever you speak, you did mention just a couple of minutes ago about having the deaf accent. When you speak and people don't know that you are deaf, do they treat you as if you are unintelligent?
Yes. You're really on top of it, yes. So I felt that look on her face. As soon as I start speaking, I can see that teeny little change, like, oh, they're realizing something, and they start treating me like a kid, or start speaking slow, or get awkward. I don't know, it's very frustrating. And I'm like, just talk to me like a human being. You don't have to talk differently unless you talk really fast, then maybe you want to slow down a little bit, but not like that. No. But if you're talking really fast like this, then yeah, you probably slow down a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I have witnessed that as well, that, and people in wheelchairs get spoken to also as if they are unintelligent just because they're in a wheelchair. I would have students that happened to frequently, and it was the strangest thing, because it wasn't just the adults who would do it. It would also be other students would use that baby talk to the, and I was like, why are you doing that? You get baby talk, I take it, by that facial expression.
Yeah. Somebody just mentioned, I had someone ask me if I was blonde because I didn't hear them. Oh my God. I'm sorry, I'm blonde people. My mother's blonde and she's great.
Yeah. And Fran says too, some people with walkers, they treat people with walkers as if they are somehow unintelligent because, and I'll be honest, Meryl, that's one of the main reasons that I wanted to do #NoLimits is to try to get it out there to people and change that perspective and change that attitude. Because we are missing out on amazing conversations, amazing potential friendships, amazing potential romances, whatever, because we have these wrong beliefs. And I'm hoping that, you know, in 200 episodes, I have been able to change some people's minds and perspectives and open some eyes to, you know, the abilities, because there's a whole lot more to you than the fact that you're deaf. You know, you're a motivational speaker.
It's a big part of me, no doubt, because it does affect. I can only control so many things in my life. For example, I'm going to apply for a job, but I can't get that job unless somebody takes the chance on me, looks at my resume, contact me, and gives me a chance. That part, I have to hope. I mean, all I can do is make my resume the best I can. But other than that, it's in the other person's court.
Yeah.
And I wanted to mention, you said you don't like the word disability, but a lot of people with disability say it's not a bad word. Disabled and disability are not bad words. And when we use euphemisms, it makes people more afraid of people with disabilities when you're trying to tiptoe around the world. So that's the big problem we have today. So many things are not being spoken about because of woke, the fear of wokeness, all the bad talk about wokeness. And besides, being woke is not a bad thing either. But when people are avoiding topics, that's when problems start happening.
Yeah, and I don't like it. I think because I, having been an English teacher, that word dis, or the prefix dis, means un. And I don't believe that people are unable to do things, you know, and like I said, I see people's abilities, and I focused on that with my students. And I want to uplift people because we all have things that we do differently, not to the same scale as somebody else. I mean, my goodness, your son is an aerospace person. I would have no clue how to have a conversation about that with him, but that doesn't mean I can't have conversations with him about other things. And so when I feel like when we say, especially in a school setting, when the people that are involved are really designing the instruction for the student, if they think that that child is unable, and I heard that a lot, they can't do this, they won't do that, you know, and again, that's kind of what this kind of stemmed from, was wanting to change that perspective. And L.A. Jansen, you are the winner of the 2 St. Louis Cardinals baseball tickets for May 6th at 6:45, because you were the last one to comment. Again, the timer, it's on do not disturb, so you didn't hear it. But she did say, when I was young, I wanted to be a nurse, but couldn't because I couldn't hear through the stethoscope.
I don't know what they do now, but I know there are deaf doctors, so they must have come up with a way around it. I'm not in the medical field, so I don't keep up with that. But yeah, that's a pretty important tool, but I'm sure there's ways around it. And Shelley, you're still right. People with disabilities are constantly underestimated. I mean, I always tell the story in my talk about in third grade, my school put me in the lowest math and reading classes. Back then, you had levels, so top, right? And my mother was not having it. I was fortunate my mother knew my abilities and spoke to the school. Well, most parents would say they must know what they're doing. That's scary. If my mom just said they must know what they're doing, I could have been in other low classes and not accomplished much in my life because people viewed me as incapable. But because right. My mom fixed that, I got in the top math and third highest reading classes. And I thrived. I was successful and continue to be successful because she had believed I was capable, even if the school did not. But I thrived in those classes because they challenged me appropriately. But imagine if I had just stayed on the bottom of every level, I wouldn't be where I am today. I probably wouldn't have a family and the life I have.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. One of the talks that I give, one of the presentations that I do is understanding behaviors and the fact that we as educators, and I truly think society in general, we look at invisible disabilities And we have too high of expectations sometimes because we don't see it. And so we think they're faking or they're just being lazy or whatever the awful other things were that I would hear as a teacher. But then if we see or hear someone with that with a disability, then we lower our expectations too low. And so we have to figure out, you know, it's an individual. Let's figure out what this individual knows. And let's continue to, you know, have reasonable and relevant expectations that are achievable for that individual and not to make them too easy or so difficult that, you know, if it's too easy, why are they going to try? And if it's too difficult, why are they going to try? So just getting that, you know, as close to level and right where it needs to be as possible. And then having those high expectations. So Fran has a question and we're going to have to wrap up here shortly. How do you feel about person first language?
I tend not to have feelings about them either way. I use identity first. I say I'm a deaf person, not a person who is deaf. I find that awkward and a long way of saying deaf person. But it used to be we always use first person English in the United States. It depends on where you live. That's a factor in what people use. And the second depends on the individual. The United States used to be primarily first person English, and a lot of organizations, state organizations, use first person English as a default. But more and more people with disabilities themselves prefer identity first language, especially in the autism field. They're a very big proponent of identity first often. And of course, there are always exceptions. I try to avoid ever saying 100% this way. It's 100. No, there's always exceptions. There are people who prefer to use the word special needs. There are people who prefer to use the word like handicap that so many people don't like. And I'm just saying these words as an education. Hopefully I'm not triggering anybody.
Right. Yeah. And Fran says both of her kiddos have different needs. And then she also says thank you. So I want to let people know really quickly that the way to find you is through your website, which is Meryl.net. And then also, if they want to learn more about you or if they want to get in contact with you or hire you to go, they can email you at info@meryl.net. And we are just about out of time. And so I want to give you opportunity right now to say anything that we haven't discussed or any words of wisdom or encouragement, whatever. This is your opportunity. You know, when you agreed to come on, was there something you definitely wanted to say or get out there? This is the chance to do it.
Something that came to mind is you have to invite people with disabilities. A lot of us have been burned so many times that we give up of trying. We give up of trying for whatever, or going for a theater role. We need to be invited because it's just like it's not worth it. We're going to run into so many barriers. And that's why I just completed my first professional acting role in which I got paid. And it took 3 invitations, 6 people to make that happen. So,
wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome. So can you tell us what this role is, or do we have to wait until it gets closer to being released?
The show is over last week. It was Into the Woods at a local theater. So not something you can watch online or anything, unfortunately.
Okay. All right.
I played Milky Rice, the cow.
Okay, cool. Well, I just want to very quickly, I know those who are listening as a podcast, you're not going to see this, but you can always jump over to the YouTube channel and check out her website. That's what I am on now. I love, and you've got the same shirt or with the same saying, progress over perfection. It is so important. And I think we do a horrible job in this country of promoting perfectionism or perfect anything versus celebrating the progress. So is that, with that style of shirt, is that something that is part of kind of what you do?
Yes. I'm trying to help people get so overwhelmed with the idea of getting started with disability inclusion and accessibility that I've started associating it with progress over perfection. Progress over perfection has been around for many decades, but mm-hmm. I connected it with accessibility. That's why I have the accessibility icon over to show the connection to help people get started. That adding captions, that's a good first step. And you just keep making progress, keep adding more things.
Right. Awesome. Meryl, it has been quite a pleasure to talk with you today. And thank you, everyone who joined and who commented. Thank you and congratulations again to Fran and L.A. Jansen. I will be reaching out to both of you to make sure that you get your tickets to the Splash and Safari in Holiday World and also to the St. Louis Cardinals baseball game in May. For those of you who are just listening in the replay, I'm sorry. This was one episode that you had to be here live in order to make it happen. I don't do that often, but occasionally I had to do it in order to make it work. So I hope you will still comment, though, and let Meryl know how much you appreciate everything that she is doing in her world and just the fact that she was here today. Make sure we send her some love. Thank you all, and I will see you again next week. Remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.